This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
True crime fans will love Crime House True Crime Stories, a Crime House original podcast. Every Monday, you'll experience the most notorious true crime cases from that week in history, all linked by a common theme, from serial killers to disappearances to unsolved murders and so much more. Follow and listen to Crime House True Crime Stories, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with Crime House Studios, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
Hey, happy Wednesday morning to you. Welcome back to the Mark Cox Morning Show. And happily, we've got Kim St. Ange back in the studio with us this morning. Kim, good morning.
Good morning.
Carl Middleman in here, of course, as well. Yesterday, Kim, of course, you missed us because you were staring at the inside of your eyeballs. But I had a horrible frog in my throat that I couldn't shake. And for some reason, I was fine in my office a minute ago, and I walk in here and get on the mic, and I can still hear it.
I wonder what's been going on this year with your voice. I don't notice it as bad as it probably sounds worse to you.
Oh, well, that's good news. I hear it, and I apologize for that. Hopefully, a little bit of coffee will act like Drano this morning and get that cleaned out here before too long. I don't know. Hey, boy, the world has been on fire overnight. We got a new budget passed by the House. Didn't look like it was going to happen. And then President Trump started working the phones, and lo and behold, they're going to have one big, beautiful bill. Now, Thomas Massie voted no. He claims it adds billions of dollars in extra spending that he wasn't going to be part of, and he voted with the Democrats. He was the only Republican to cross over and vote with the Democrats on this. So I don't know, but we have managed to vote for a budget. And it's going to be very different than the one the Senate sent over. And we'll wait and see what that looks like when it gets hashed out. That's kind of what we've been working on overnight. Kim, you missed this yesterday. We have ignited a little bit of a firestorm.
What's that?
There's an ad running on our radio station for Roundup. It's this bear ad. I don't know if you've heard it or not. They got billboards up. They're running a full court press to try to pass this bill in the Senate. And there's been a lot of debate over what it does. Yesterday we had Adam Schnelting on. Yesterday we had John Lamping on. They're both opposed to the bill, and they both made the claim that it provides blanket immunity to these big pharma companies who use this particular glyphosate, which is the key ingredient we're talking about here in their herbicides that they sell to farmers. And the question is whether or not glyphosate is safe in our food supply. The company, I heard from so many people that worked at Monsanto/Bayer yesterday, sending me emails and texting me and telling me, you've got to have the other side of this because Roundup is safe. It's been proven safe. And even though there have been a few lawsuits that have said otherwise.
I'm sorry, I don't believe that.
Well, I've had people sending me, you know, papers on it, and I'm not a scientist.
Here's the problem with the internet these days is you really have to go back and look at who's funding the study. And I know you and I have talked about that, but let's say I have some crazy argument that getting 1 hour of sleep actually is better for your health. If I really did enough research, I could probably find a study that would back that up. And that's the issue, is that people do these crazy studies to prove the point that they already have in their head, and they pay this outrageous amount of money, and then they say, here you go. Look, this proves my point. It's safe. It's good for my health. I think that's where I get frustrated, is that, you know, any argument you have, you can probably find some, for lack of a better word, stupid study that would claim that that's accurate.
Well, what we did yesterday was reach out to the folks at Bayer and request an interview on it. And they offered us a couple of different options and said they were going to start working on it.
Good.
They offered me somebody from the agriculture industry, because there's an argument that what Roundup did was change the paradigm, they would argue, for farmers. It allowed farmers to do one application early in the growing season to eliminate weeds in their fields, and that they basically cross-engineered the seeds to ignore the Roundup. So it kills the weeds, but it doesn't kill the plant, the corn or whatever, the soybean or whatever that happens to be, and that they've offered me a farmer, because they claim that farmers are going to have a very tough time if they end up having to, for some reason, I can't imagine them doing this, stop making Roundup because of all of these lawsuits. That seems to be what they're insinuating, that if the lawsuits are allowed to continue, and they've got these efforts going on in many states, that it'll reach a point where it won't make any sense for them to make the product anymore. And they're claiming that the farmers will suffer from that. So they offered me a farmer, and they offered me somebody from the scientific side at Bayer. And right now, we're still waiting to hear back from them. We did talk to them yesterday. They claimed they were going to try to get us an interview for today. That didn't happen. Maybe they'll get us an interview for tomorrow. I mean, I just think what's important for me as the host is to drive home to people that I don't have all the answers. I'm suspicious when anybody wants immunity from legal action up front. But they claim it's not blanket immunity. It's very specific. It's very targeted, so that not just anybody who got cancer could come back and suddenly claim it's because of this product, because that's very hard to prove.
Yeah.
And I don't know all the answers. I know a lot of good people who work over at Bayer whose livelihoods obviously depend on it. But I'm going to try to have both sides of this on fairly. It passed the House. It's now in the Senate. And yesterday, 9 Missouri senators held a news conference and said they plan to filibuster this, if necessary, to stop it in the Missouri Senate. So I'm going to try to cover it as fairly as I can. Hopefully we'll get somebody from Bayer before the end of the week.
That's good. That'd be great if they did.
Yeah, we're working on that. When I get that interview, I'll let you know. A little later this morning, we're going to get Denny Hoskins on. I almost called him senator. Now Missouri Secretary of State. And the gambling addicts, the online sports betting people are really mad because the industry wanted to fast-track sports gambling, and Denny Hoskins said no. They wanted to declare it an emergency so that they could immediately open sports gaming offices at the local casinos and get this thing rolling sooner than fall. Because, of course, they're anxious to reap all the profits they're going to make from, just my opinion. You know, I was never in favor of the bill because of the way they lied about it. If that's how you choose to spend your money, you're an adult. I don't care. I really don't. I'm not against online sports gambling. I don't do it. But if that's what you want to do, you can do it. But a lot of people are mad at Denny because he said no to an emergency clause and said it's going to have to go through the regular procedure, which means they may not be able to legally sports bet in Missouri until September, maybe, instead of...
It was August 31st.
June?
Yeah.
Yeah. So September 1st instead of June. And we'll get him on here and let him explain what happened this morning. Apparently, he joined Mark Reardon yesterday. I listened to a little bit of that interview. And Hoskins says, basically, it's not an emergency. So we'll get him on here and talk to him in the 8 o'clock hour. Right now, Carl, let's get to our top stories, please.
The Mark Cox Shortlist.
worried that targeting an individual firm or individuals who, you know, aren't Jack Smith.
I've been targeted for 4 years, longer than that. So you don't tell me about targeting.
Yeah, President Trump yesterday firing back on a reporter who argued that he was targeting people within the government, particularly Jack Smith. And he goes, don't talk to me about targeting. Get out of here.
We've had more than 1 million workers who have chosen to participate in this very simple task of, again, sending 5 bullet points. I actually participated in myself.
Yeah, what's the big deal? I got a letter from my wife yesterday asking me the 5 things I accomplished last week. Why can't government workers do that?
I have found some leakers. They will be fired. There will be consequences. And remember, when they leak information to the press in order to blow an op, they're putting law enforcement lives in jeopardy.
Amen. Thank you, Christy Noem. The TDS infects many levels of our federal government, and people like Christy Noem, head of Homeland Security, is promising to root them out.
Discussion will begin about moving the Taste of St. Louis out of downtown and into Clayton. The event puts some of the region's best bites all in one place, drawing thousands of hungry visitors.
Well, that's interesting. We got businesses leaving downtown, and now the Taste of St. Louis may be moving to Clayton. Do they want they just call it the Taste of Clayton at that point?
They probably should, but what's interesting about this is that the co-director of that event claims the reason for the move would not be because of safety concerns.
Interesting.
It's more of an economic reason, he claims. He pointed to the success of the St. Louis Art Fair, which is held every year in Clayton, and he thinks that that's indicative that that would be a better spot than downtown. But keep in mind, you know, I think it was at Ballpark Village last year, the Taste of St. Louis Festival.
Yeah.
But for, I believe it was 4 years prior, it had been held in Chesterfield, and then they moved it back downtown. So it, not every year has it been downtown, but I guess of the 30 years it's been going on, this would mark the 30th year. I guess primarily maybe it's been in the more of the St. Louis City area.
So, yeah, but I mean, I agree with that. Maybe it's not just for crime, but if it's such a success in downtown Clayton every year, there's a reason for that.
People feel safer.
People feel safer.
Well, and maybe parking is better too. I mean, Clayton can be kind of crazy parking wise, though.
You're not as at greater risk of having your car windows smashed as you leave your car parked in a parking lot to walk down the street and sample different food.
I just all these companies or event organizers that claim it has nothing to do with safety. I also don't buy that. I mean, do whatever's best for your festival. I get it. I mean, Clayton's a great spot, but to try to make the argument this has nothing to do with safety, I'm just not sure that that's believable.
No, I would agree. So anyway, that may be happening. All right, going over here just a little bit. Carl, who's got our national anthem today?
Last night, Mark, the Blues won 7-2.
Nice. They seem inspired.
Yeah, my thumb hurts because blew the horn. But doing the national anthem last night was this man, Peshard Owens.
The Trump administration has already proven to be the most transparent ever. And this president, the most accessible in history. This is evidenced by President Trump's daily press conferences in the Oval Office, where he takes many questions from the journalists who have the honor and privilege of standing before the beautiful Resolute desk. The president and this entire White House are committed to ensuring the American people continue to receive this same level of historic transparency, access, and visibility.
So the guy who runs the White House Correspondents Association used to work for Politico, which of course was being funded by USAID. Clearly no fan of Donald Trump, as the Correspondents Association has never been. And they're all screaming, this isn't fair. But if you'll remember, when the Biden administration took over the White House, they canceled press access to over 400 reporters. And we had Chanel Rion on the show many times over the years. She was, of course, she's with OAN, I'm sorry, One America News. And they were repeatedly overlooked and never allowed to ask a question to Joe Biden. In 4 years, she tried to get them moved out of the White House press briefing room completely. That is Jen Psaki and then what was her name?
Karine Jean-Pierre.
Karine Jean-Pierre.
Yeah, well,
now, she's such a bad memory, I can't even remember her initials.
In the White House's defense and by the Biden administration defense, barely any of the press was able to ask a question because he very rarely ever held a press conference.
Yeah, but there's still a question of access.
No, I agree. It's funny how they're all upset when the Bidens did the same thing. It's just now that they're impacted, all of a sudden it's not okay.
Well, and the change is that instead of the Correspondents Association deciding who is in and who's not, and they do that mainly on their own membership level. In other words, you have to become a member of the mafia in order to operate in the mafia. It's now the White House press team that's going to decide that instead of the White House Correspondents Association. And they're acting like it's somehow an effort to filter the news. Donald Trump is the most accessible and so far transparent president we've had in the history of this country. Because he takes any, you may not like his answers, but he takes every question from every reporter. He doesn't have a list in front of him telling him who to call on next because they've already soft-pedaled the question. He takes all, he may chew people out. But this is a ridiculous argument that they're somehow trying to shield the media. Like, I'll bet you I could apply now for a White House press pass. I've been there before. I've been in the White House press briefing room. I applied for like a temporary pass during Trump's first term when I went up there. And I was there during the Obama administration and was allowed into the White House press briefing room. Under Biden's administration, I wouldn't have been able to do that. And under the Trump administration, I'll be able to do that again. How is that restricting access to anybody? ABC, NBC, CBS, MSNBC, CNN, they're all still in there. No, nobody's been removed. It's just that people, voices are being added that the mainstream media doesn't want you to hear from.
Yeah.
That's more information, not less information. Play the other part of that Levitt bite there, Carl. Is that cut number So cut number four, please.
Trump administration has already proven to be the most transparent ever. And this president, the most accessible in history. This is evidenced by President Trump's daily press conferences in the Oval Office, where he takes many questions from the journalists who have the honor and privilege of standing before the beautiful Resolute desk. The president and this entire White House are committed to ensuring the American people continue to receive this same level of historic transparency, access, and visibility.
Yeah.
That's not it. Sorry.
That was not the right bite?
No, it's the exact same one that we just
heard. Oh, there was a part two to that, wasn't there?
There is. Oh. I'm looking for it.
Well, it was a good bite, so it was worth playing again.
And yeah. Well, there's cut three, and then there's cut four. Are they the same bite? They're two different bites, right?
They're supposed to be.
Oh, I see. Okay. Well, not a big deal. She did go on to kind of explain why they're doing what they're doing and that they're going to open it up to more people. So, Kim, you and I can go apply for our White House press credentials.
Perfect.
Take a trip to D.C.
You wouldn't be kicked out like the old promo said.
Ask a question. First time around, they would let you send in a request to ask a question at a press briefing, and they would bring you up online via Zoom and let you ask the question room remotely.
Wow.
Unlike the Biden administration, it wouldn't let you ask Joe Biden anything unless it was screened in advance. Wow. It's a mind-blowing difference, isn't it? There is no doubt about that. All right. We will get to Kim on a whim when we come back. Glad to have Kim back in the studio with us this morning. A little later, we're going to talk to our friend Genevieve Wood and then Secretary of State Denny Hoskins at about 7:35 with the controversy over when sports betting can actually begin.
Kim on a whim.
Here's a question for you, Mark. Do you remember how old you were when you bought your first house?
I do. In fact, I think I was 29 years old.
Wow. Okay. So you've beat the odds.
Maybe 28.
I find this article that says that the median age of home buyers is now 56 years old.
What? That's crazy.
So this is 2024, because obviously we won't get next year's until 2026, but it was up from 45 years old in 2021. Now, just to give you some perspective, the Reagan era, like we're talking back in the 1980s, the median age of home buyers was 31 years old.
Okay.
There are so many factors that you could blame for this. Obviously, inflation, you know, the rates dropped like crazy low during COVID, you know, to 2-something, 3-something. So a lot of people who maybe had a higher interest rate were able to refinance. And now it's hard to want to leave that, you know, 3% interest rate that you have.
Yeah, but we're talking about a new home.
Well, not, I mean, this is just the average age of a home buyer. But that's insane.
So
56 years old.
Just to understand, it's not the average age of a person buying their first home. It's the average age of somebody buying a home these days is 56 years old?
This is what it says, is the average age of a home buyer is 56 years old. But that would, but to me, that includes first-time home buyer, right? That's kind of all it's under the umbrella of it.
I guess it would, but I think that would be a different statistic if you ask somebody their age when they bought their first home. I can't imagine. I mean, particularly when interest rates were so low, it was so easy for people to go out and buy.
So let me give you some information, because I had forgotten.
Sure.
I had taken a screenshot. I did some digging on this yesterday, and I had gone back and went down a rabbit hole. Okay, so this is the, so like I said, the median age of a home buyer in 2024 was 56 years old. Okay, it was, let's see here. So the median age of a first-time home buyer is 38. That was as of 2024.
All right.
But that has gone up from 29 in 1981. So we're still, there's still a relatively big increase. But I think a lot of people just don't want to give up their really good interest rate, understandably. And so even if they have a home they love or they'd like to get out of theirs, it's not worth it for them to do that right now. And so that has then created fewer homes on the market, which then drives up the demand. I mean, there's just a lot of things right now. Inflation.
I just have a theory on that, that it's gone from 29 to 38 because people don't have the same values that they had in 1980. That it was an investment in your future, mm-hmm. and it was something solid that you owned that was going to appreciate in value. What it tells me is that people are wasting their money by staying in apartments and paying rent. You never get any of that money back. You don't gain any appreciation to it. It's just gone.
Yeah.
To me, it's like leasing a car. I don't understand why anybody would ever do that.
I don't either.
But they do it. And it's just money. You might as well put that money in a pile and burn it, as far as I'm concerned.
To me, I agree with you. It's a reflection of a cultural shift. You have people nowadays, my age group, which is the millennials, and the people younger, the Gen Zers, who are anti-commitment. And you see that reflected in marriage, too. People are marrying later. They want to have kids later. They don't want anything tying them down. When you talk about what people want to spend their money on, a lot of people my age and younger will say experiences. So people are willing to forego having that the American dream that I think so many others had maybe in the 1980s of buying your home and actually owning it. And they would rather rent a smaller apartment because that allows them in their mind to have the money and the freedom to be able to travel. They don't have to worry about home projects and their pipes freezing in the winter. They can just pack up and leave, and they know somebody else is taking care of the majority of the things going on in their place. I think we're going to continue to see this trend.
Those would be millennials now, right?
Well, millennials and the Gen Zers, right? Because aren't Gen Zers 20?
Older. I don't know how old are they.
Somethings?
Yeah.
Carl, you might know that.
Yeah. Millennials, like, are having kids now.
Well, millennials, me. And I think it goes up to what? 40s?
Gen Alpha's after that.
I get so confused on the different generations. And people also,
teenagers now.
Which is crazy. People also talk about how a lot of people don't have enough money saved up to put 20% down.
Well, and I think that's part of the
issue.
That
is part of it. People don't want to save their money. And I get that. Like, depending on what type of home you're buying, what level that's at, 20% is a lot. But keep in mind, you don't have to put 20% down. Yes, that's financially smart, but you don't have to do that. You could put 3% down. You're going to pay PMI to get up to that 20% equity, but you still can put less. And I found this YouTube video that was talking about something that Zillow did, and this YouTuber was talking about then the impact that could have on the market. Listen to this.
then Zillow recently announced that they would be trialing a 1% down payment loan product to help people that couldn't save any money make the biggest financial commitment of their lives.
So a 1% down payment would mean that people would be able to bid each other higher and higher and higher because they only need to put down 1%. So this would increase prices and would not help their situation because people are outbidding each other all the time.
And that's the problem, is that it sounds good in theory and you think you're helping everybody, but then it actually ends up not being such a great thing.
Well, it's also not a great thing because you don't immediately start out with any equity in the home at all. I mean, your $10,000 or your $20,000, however much you're putting down, is still there unless, of course, the housing market drops like a rock. But over years, over a course of 20 or 30 years, real estate values appreciate. You can't get around that.
Right. Oh, my gosh.
Cars don't.
I hate. I will never buy a brand new car for that reason.
Never. I probably wouldn't either.
Will on Facebook is saying, bought my first house in 1980 with an interest rate of 15%. Oh my gosh.
That was coming out of the Jimmy Carter years. Yes.
I mean, I know I've heard the stories that it, you know, back in my day, it was 10, 12, you know, 15%. I've heard all that because we think 7 or 8% is brutal right now.
Is that how we talk? Back in my day.
I think so. Back in my day, we had to walk uphill both ways.
In our rocking chairs on the front porch, you know, back in my day, I walked to school 10 miles in the snow.
I think it just adds it just adds to it. You know what I mean? You have to do the little shaky accent voice.
I was too young then to consider buying a house, but I remember my dad having the conversation with me when interest rates were 12, 13, 14%. Son, I don't know how you're ever going to afford a house with interest rates like this. I mean, he was worried to death about it. And then, of course, when it dropped to rock bottom at 2%, in the 2% range, he couldn't believe it. I mean, that some of that happened before he passed. And he couldn't believe it ever got that low. Mm-hmm. Now, it wasn't when we bought our first house. I think our interest rate was still 6 or 7%, it seems like. I'd have to go back and look at that because it has been a long time. But still, it's an investment in your future. I hate to hear that. I would imagine if the average age today is 56 of transactional home sales, that would be people who are taking the equity out of their home after 30 years and either downsizing or buying that final house that they're going to live in until they die, right?
Yep.
Or their dream home, maybe.
You think about people who have lived in the same home for 30, 40 years, and it was in one of those upcoming, you know,
sure,
growing neighborhoods, and now they bought their home for, back in my day, I bought my home for $100,000, and now it's, you know,
worth
$750,000. Yeah. Now it's even more. It's crazy.
Exactly.
It's interesting seeing what everyone's putting on Facebook about what they had to pay. So like 10% in 1966?
Yes. It used to not be nearly as cheap. But, of course, my parents' first home cost $15,000.
That sounds dreamy.
And the other day, when we were in Ohio, last year, I think that same house was on the market for $2-something.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it was a tiny little, probably, I doubt if it was a 1,000 square feet, little tiny little three-bedroom box. But still, I mean, That's how stuff appreciates over time. Had they owned it for that long, they would have had all that equity that they could have walked out of there with.
Yep. It's just interesting. Like I said, cultural shift. People want experiences. They don't want to be tied down. They'd rather live out of their car in some cases if that meant, you know, they could get up and travel and do whatever the heck they wanted.
Well, my argument is you're going to regret that someday. I'll pull a dad on you here and tell you that if you're one of those people, you are going to regret that decision someday, that you did not invest in a tangible piece of property earlier in your life. Even if the interest rates, honestly, if you had to get a 6% interest rate, it's not the end of the world. It's been 12, 13, 15% before. This is not abnormal. It's just higher than 2%, which I don't think we're ever going to see again. I would be surprised if they ever lend money that cheaply again.
I can't even imagine having a 2% loan. I mean, that sounds absolutely amazing. We'd be able to pay off our home in 15 years, but we're paying off in 30.
Right. Yeah. Or, you know, that's why you can refinance to a 15-year usually at a little bit lower rate, but not considerably. Yeah, that's a surprising number. I'm surprised at the average age of people buying, and 38 for people buying new, the first-time home buyers. That's big. It is. All right, coming up, we're going to talk a little bit more about this Bayer bill, this Monsanto Bayer extravaganza that's making its way through the Senate, because a number of people were kind of mad at me yesterday after those two interviews we had on, because I didn't plan it with John Lamping. I just asked him the question, and he clearly is opposed to what they're doing, and he knows who the people are behind it. And then Adam Schnelting is also a part of a current group of senators working against it. So I'll try to explain all that here in coming up on the show. Stay tuned. All right. I want to talk for just a moment about this glyphosate bill that's down in the Missouri Senate now, because it passed the House. And this first came to my attention the other day because one of the state representatives who voted against it had posted a pretty long explanation of her reasons for voting against it, and people were, I don't know, I got some mixed reaction to it yesterday. Obviously, a lot of people are mad because I don't think there's a great deal of understanding about this bill, and I don't have all the answers, but I think it's important for people to I think it's important for all of us to learn a little bit more about this, is what I'm saying here. I don't have all the answers. I have concerns over a bill that would, in my opinion, limit, if not, blanket immunity is one thing. I don't think that's what this bill is. But it would limit the ability of someone to sue Bayer, for example, because there were traces of glyphosate found in them or in something they ate, and then they got cancer, and then they concluded that they got it because there were trace elements of glyphosate in there. I think that it's specifically worded. It has to do with labeling and a lot of other things. I got to tell you, you know, you have your people in life that you trust. One person I trust on this is happens to be my brother-in-law, who is a scientist. And I sent him yesterday part of the post about this, and this was his take on it. It's safer than most herbicides. None that are effective are without problems. I don't think it causes cancer unless you are maybe the one applying it and exposed at application levels, not de minimis levels found in food. Now, he's not crazy about the idea of immunity against anyone. But I did read a long article that was sent to me by someone in the ag industry regarding this. A little bit of this is obviously partisan on their part because they support the use of glyphosate. But here's part of what the article said. This controversy over whether glyphosate is dangerous was born out of a slight, statistically non-significant association between certain cancers in farmers that use glyphosate and some in vitro and animal studies. That was enough for the International Agency for Research on Cancer, a working group of the World Health Organization, which we as a country have just left, to label glyphosate as a probable carcinogen back in 2015. The article goes on to say that this ignited a firestorm of litigation against Bayer, one of the many glyphosate manufacturers. Juries, swayed by emotions and legal narratives instead of science, ruled in defense of plaintiffs' cases, reinforcing false associations to cancer and making it more challenging for credible science to prevail in a public discussion. Now, their problem with this is that the IARC does not assess risk, only hazards. And that means the question that IARC is asking is the wrong one. They think that the question should be, is there any evidence of a realistic likelihood that glyphosate causes cancer based on exposure humans may encounter?
Well, why do you need any level of immunity if your product is safe? And keep in mind, the FDA approved Red Dye 40 and all these other dyes that we're finding in so many of our foods. They approve that for human consumption. The EPA considers red dye to be of, quote, low concern. A lot of these things that were said to be safe by our government, by these agencies that are supposed to protect us, have lied. Or maybe you shouldn't even just say lied. They've overlooked things. They've looked at bogus studies. Why do these vaccine companies, like the COVID shot, but really any vaccine, but let's go after the COVID shot. Why is it impossible for you to actually be able to sue Pfizer, for example? They are protected by that. If you actually read the handout when you got that shot, you have to get it knowing that you could put a claim out there and there is a pot of money where you could receive something, but it's not going to be directly from Pfizer. You cannot directly sue Pfizer if you have any sort of a negative impact from taking the COVID shot, for example. So that's my concern. Why do you need any level of immunity if you are saying your product is safe? That is raising red flags for me, and I think it should for other people too.
Yeah. Well, I mean, again, it's one of those... It's one of those arguments that either side can make emotionally. I'd love to get to the facts on it. Obviously, the people at Bayer have one point of view. Here's the problem: if this is a problem, we all have it. If you eat food in America today, you have eaten food from plants that have been bioengineered, mm-hmm. seeds that have been bioengineered. So we've moved so far away from the original organic seeds in this country that mm-hmm. I don't know that you could ever go back. I don't know how you would ever go back. Honestly.
Well, that's part of the problem. And a lot
and
of these companies.
Maybe it is. And maybe RFK can address that.
I think he can help, but I think it's an uphill battle. A lot of these companies can sit there and say organic, organic, and use these little key words that we all look for on our food now. And it's really not what they're claiming it to be. You're right. It's bad. And that is so reflected in the fact that our country spends trillions of dollars in healthcare and we are so incredibly unhealthy.
I would agree. Lots of issues going on out there that we didn't have 30 years ago, for sure. All right, coming up, we will get a check of business with our friend Nicole Murray, who is back today. We got in other news coming up. Our friend Genevieve Wood and talking about J.D. Vance in Europe. We'll get to that at about 7:20. Stay tuned.
Get more at 971talk.com.